Tuesday, December 3rd, we talked about the gig economy in the U.S. and here in Connecticut. Could what's happening in other states happen here in Connecticut, where big Democrat-backed unions are trying to crack down on companies like DoorDash, Lyft, and Uber and make people who just want to work a few hours a day become regular employees? What would that do to the business model? Also checking in with us in the final hour, the 5 o'clock hour, Fairfield County Republican State Rep. Gail Laviel. She talked about what she's hearing from her constituents in Fairfield County and what likely might or might not happen coming up in the short session of the General Assembly. Hey, how are you? Thanks so much for hanging out with us. We appreciate it. We know you have a choice, and thank you for choosing us this afternoon here at WICC 600 on the radio and online at WICC600.com, 203-333-9422, 333-WICC. Joining us right now, a senior policy analyst at the Independent Women's Forum, Patrice Onwuka, is the guest. We're bringing her in to talk about a scenario that she's following in a lot of blue and left-leaning states when it comes to the gig economy. Patrice, Paul here in Bridgeport, how are you today?
Paul, I'm doing great, but I think you guys are under snow right now, right?
Well, yeah, we did. Where we are, 3 to 4 inches, but further up in the state, it's a winter wonderland, Patrice. You know, it's one of those things that it's lovely to look at, but you're happy you're not in the middle of, you know?
I can understand. Yeah. Here in the D.C. area, they don't know how to do it.
Oh, my God.
Thank goodness it's you guys, not us.
I have heard stories about what an inch or two of snow will do to inside the Beltway there, huh?
Shuts it down entirely.
Well, you're from Boston, so you must sit there and just laugh, right, when this stuff happens in D.C.?
Oh, I do. I do. I could take a broom and dust off my car in like 5 minutes, and it takes the neighbors an hour.
Yeah, I'm a New England guy all my life, went to school at BU, so we went to opposite ends of Commonwealth Ave, but we're not going to bring that up, so we won't do that. You had an interesting piece, and this is something, Patrice, that I have been following, and I know you folks in the Independent Women's Forum have been following. You know, a couple, 3 years ago, this gig economy, everything was chugging along. A friend of mine was driving for Uber. Another friend of mine was driving for Lyft. And I'm like, hey, this is pretty cool. People can be, you know, what I've been in the radio business sometimes years on and off besides a regular gig, you know, doing play-by-play for this team or working a few weeks here as a fill-in for this station. A gig economy. So, you know, I get paid as I would be a plumber or an electrician, and then it's up to me to fill out a 1099 form or bring that form to my accountant. But now, Patrice, a lot of these states, I guess New Jersey's the latest, it was happening in California, a lot of the unions here are trying to flex their muscle, correct?
They are. So you've got the unions who have seen their numbers dwindle over the past few decades, looking for new ways to gain relevancy, and it's to target the gig economy, whether you're talking about Uber and Lyft and ride sharing, or even the hotel industry trying to target Airbnb. Then you partner the unions with revenue-hungry lawmakers. Who see, you know, these big tech companies as cash cows. And so now the new movement is to say, well, you're not an independent contractor if you drive for Uber or Lyft like your friend. You are actually an employee of Uber. Well, hold on there. That's actually not true. But mm-hmm. But these lawmakers are saying it's time to reclassify independent contractors in the gig economy and a lot of others as employees. That it's supposed to be a benefit to the employees, but you know what? They're going to lose out on opportunities and they're going to lose out on flexibility.
So what argument are these companies using, Patrice? Are they using any sort of a financial argument or a semantic argument? Are they trying to point out loopholes here? How are they framing this?
Well, the opponents of these bills, like Uber and Lyft, they're saying, listen, if we have to turn all of these drivers into employees, we now have to pay taxes on them. We're going to have to provide them with benefits, mm-hmm. potentially medical benefits or healthcare benefits, and you know, abide by minimum wage laws, overtime laws. That is going to cut into our bottom line, which we can't afford. So as a result, you as a consumer, you're going to see the cost of the services you rely on go up, probably skyrocket to be able to afford this. Now, let's not forget, we see that Uber is a $1 billion company. They have yet to turn a profit. They are not a profitable company yet. So, you know, when you're talking about raising their labor costs 30%, they're going to have to pass those costs along to us as consumers. And we're going to eventually disappear. And I think that's the point. It's going to kill these big companies. And unfortunately, for the drivers, for the people who just want to make some extra income or even maybe make a living, they're going to lose those working opportunities, lose the ability to to determine their own schedule, when, how often, where they work and how they work, mm-hmm. and lose the flexibility.
Yeah, I mean, the people, Patrice, that I know that drive for Uber and Lyft, the biggest thing they like about it is after they drop their kids off at school or in the middle of the day when their mom is doing something and they don't have to, you know, shuttle her around, you know, they can go to their app, they can turn on the fact that they are now available, and they can, in a sense, you know, work whenever they want to. And from what I read and from what you just said, I guess number one, the biggest thing that would be hurt here is the ability of a person like, say, you or I to contract ourselves out for an hour or 2 hours or 3 hours and do the basic American thing here, Patrice, is deciding when we want to work and when we don't want to work.
Exactly. I mean, it's interesting. I saw a study in 2018 that asked women who work in the gig economy, why do you do it? And overwhelmingly, the top reason is flexibility. And they were asked another question, would you want to become an employee of the same company like Uber or remain an independent contractor? 2 out of 3 said we want to remain an independent contractor. So it tells us that, you know, the moms who stay at home but want to drive, pick up a few hours of work while the kids are at school, or the caregivers. You've got a lot of baby boomers, even millennials, who are taking care of their parents. And you know what? The 9-to-5 job doesn't provide that flexibility to be at the doctor's office during several times a week. Well, now you can make your own schedule, work early, work late, work during off hours, and really generate a good amount of income. That disappears if companies are now forced to control your schedule and to determine when and where and how often you work.
And you pointed out here, and this is one thing I don't understand. I guess that's why God made lawyers. You know, New Jersey slapped New Jersey slapped Uber with a $650 million tax bill because they didn't pay employment taxes. Well, again, I'm sure, Patrice, Uber came back to Jersey, and this is obviously the opening salvo, but says, well, wait a minute, these people are not employees. They're 1099, they're independent contractors. Is that how this is shaking out?
Yeah. So what happened is New Jersey also passed, they've introduced legislation to now turn those independent contractors into employees. And they actually cut and pasted this from California, which introduced a really sinister similar bill earlier this year. And so in essence, it's saying unless you pass this, it's a really stringent 3-prong test, then all of those drivers, all of those people on TaskRabbit, all those people delivering your McDonald's through DoorDash, they are now your employees. And so what you're going to see is, depending on if they're Democratic-led legislatures, it may pass. And depending on whether you have a Democratic governor, it may be signed into law. Now, these tech companies are going to fight back, and rightly so. They're going to employ their customers and their drivers or the people who use their apps to push back through ballot initiatives. The question is whether these ballot initiatives are going to be successful because, of course, as we opened up with, the unions are going to jump into it, and they're going to be on the side of to push the legislation forward. So, you know, so we're going to see how this all shakes out. There may be some sort of compromise bill at the end of the day, but I view this in a largely as an assault on technology, a way of saying, you know what, this is new, this is innovative, but it does not fit the mold of how we've always done business. And so you're going to have to follow what we've always done and play by our rules, or you won't play at all.
Patrice, hang on. We'll be right back to you. Patrice Onwuka is the guest from the International Women's Forum, talking about the fact that several states, California one, New Jersey another, are suddenly telling gig economy companies like Uber, like Lyft, like people who drive and deliver for the food services, hey, wait a minute, we're not going to allow you to operate here just using independent contractors. More with Patrice straight ahead. First, though, traffic and weather together on the sixes at 316 right here. It's Connecticut Today for Tuesday on WICC. And we continue with Patrice Onwuka from the Independent Women's Forum, senior policy analyst. She's written about the fact that some of these blue-leaning states, and it wouldn't surprise me if it happened here in Connecticut soon enough, because Jersey's done it, they're trying to do it, California is trying to do it, they're telling people and these companies who drive for Uber and Lyft, the gig economy, as it's called, say, hey, wait a minute, you have employees here and not independent contractors. And, you know, folks, and again, like I've said, in the broadcast business, I've done here from time to time, an independent contractor basically gets paid a lump sum of money, and then you get a 1099 form that shows the taxes were not taken out. You've got to straighten that up with the feds and your local state and city and town, using an accountant at the end of the year when it comes tax time. Yeah, Patrice, do you think, as I do, that this is, I see this ticketed for the Supreme Court, don't you?
Oh, well, it would be great for the Supreme Court to eventually step in if we have enough of these states trying to enact laws that, you know, go against federal policy and potentially the Constitution. I mean, it's a challenge because, unfortunately, you know, it depends on how much pushback that you get, whether these companies are able to successfully fight and shut down these legislations, or whether they kind of, you know, go with the flow and eventually give in. But it has to be a national issue. And, you know, the way you framed it, I really like how you frame it, Paul. This is about entrepreneurship when you think about it. This is about regular people who are making their own schedule, who are working for themselves, and to tell them that, no, you can't work for yourself using literally just your phone to find customers, to find consumers of your product and service. That is what's at stake here. And that goes to the heart of entrepreneurship in our country.
And you know, Patrice, you pointed out something back in the earlier part of our conversation that I always mention, and people say, no, that can't be true. And I say, well, go to the great God Google and look it up yourself. You are correct, Patrice. Uber doesn't make any money. They are constantly losing money. They bleed money. And, you know, people seem to think, well, look at Uber. They get all these investors. But as you said, even with the system they have set up now, they don't make a profit.
They don't. I mean, take Connecticut, your state, for example. I saw that you guys earlier, your legislature introduced a bill that would force Uber to pay drivers 75% of their fares.
Oh.
Well, you know, you might say, some people might say, oh, that sounds fair to me. Uber keeps 25%. But there's so many costs that go into the Uber as a platform being able to provide that service. It's not just, you know, a little app that they set up and regularly, you know, update with tech updates. They also provide insurance coverage. They have to do background checks mm-hmm. for all of the drivers. There are so many ways that they're investing in research and development. Really good companies reinvest the money they earn to be able to make their services even better. And so when you talk about taking 25%, only 25%, that's going to cut into their margin significantly. And that means that they may not be able to deliver the same product that they could before. They probably just wouldn't be able to absorb that kind of cost.
And if you turn the screws, Patrice, on these companies, guess what? They're not going to be getting the influx of cash that they're still getting from, you know, from hedge funds and from private investors who hopefully one day will see profitability. And you and I know what happens after that. The companies, unless they can get a rescue of cash, they're going to go belly up.
Exactly. Now, you know what, Paul? I didn't mention this in this piece for Fox News, but this is not within a vacuum. This one bill in New Jersey or one bill in California is not alone. When you look at these states, they are enacting increases in minimum wages, mm-hmm. increases in paid leave or paid leave benefits. So many different mandates are being stacked on these companies. And sure, they may be making a lot of money, but that doesn't mean that these increased in mandates, these new taxes are not hurting, eating away at their bottom line. And eventually what happens, you see capital flight. You see companies move out because they're simply not able to create a profit. And at the end of the day, that is what you exist to do, to create a profit and to provide benefit to society.
Yes, because people can then take that money and live their lives. Fascinating concept. Patrice, before we let you go, I was looking at your Facebook page earlier and you put a little flash poll up there as to whether or not people are surprised that Kamala Harris, we heard earlier today, dropped out of the presidential race. What's your take on that? You're in the middle there. You're in D.C. You're awash in all this politics. What's your take on that?
I was surprised, but still not surprised. Surprised because I actually thought she might have made some headway, and it's because she had such a huge bang coming out of the races at the start of this thing. I mean, the first debate when she took on Joe Biden, it seemed like, wow, she really is going to be a contender. But we have seen her shine just fizzle, mm-hmm. and she hasn't been able to raise the money. And even more importantly, she hasn't been able to define or carve out a niche for herself. Is she a centrist like Joe Biden? He already has that place in that middle lane on lockdown. Is she more to the left like Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren? Well, she sometimes has flip-flopped on things like Medicare for All.
Yeah.
So she wasn't able to figure out who she was. And people look for authenticity. They either want to be with you or they don't. And it's sad, but you know what? It's time to start clearing out a lot of these non-winners.
At least we can go to one page on the scorecard instead of two here. Patrice
exactly.
Onwuka, she's a senior policy analyst at the Independent Women's Forum. And again, you see her on Fox News and all the various news channels. Check out the Independent Women's Forum, IWF.org. Patrice, thanks so much for the time today. We appreciate it. Take care.
All right. Thanks, Paul. Take care.
Thanks, Patrice. Appreciate it there. Patrice Onwuka, O-N-W-U-K-A. Fascinating story. Her parents, her family immigrated to the U.S., grew up around Boston, went to school there, now works in D.C. in the inside the Beltway there, and can live with snow. Did you hear that? That Boston upbringing. She learned from snow, right, kids? And for that, we thank you. We know you have choices out there. Thank you for choosing us right here at WICC 600 on the radio and online at WICC600.com. The number, you know it by now, we think, 203-333-9422, 203-333-WICC. Paul Pacelli here behind the mic, Stephanie behind the glass and back of the board there, making sure I get to you. Joining us right now, Norwalk, Westport, Wilton, Republican State Rep Gail Laviel is with us. Gail, it's Paul here. How are you?
I'm fine, Paul. How are you?
Good, and great to have you on the show. We appreciate it. Well, this is the off time, obviously, and we've gone through this contentious back and forth, Gail, regarding tolls. Before we get to that and what might be coming up in the short session, the state comptroller, Kevin Lembo, came out, I guess, with his regular report to Governor Ned Lamont. Thoughts you may have on that and the fiscal aspect of where the state stands right now as to black ink versus red ink, and what do you think is coming up in the next year or so?
Sure. The Kevin Lembo, the controller, sends a letter once a month, the first of the month, just to get sort of his official rundown of where we are, revenues and expenses, and what that looks like for the end of the year. And what's interesting is his letter from the first of, from December, said that we're headed for a $31 million deficit at the end of this fiscal year in
mm-hmm.
July.
Yeah.
Now, that's not too far off from the projections that we have on revenue for November, but it's way off from his own letter from November 1st, because just a month ago, Controller Lembo was saying that the state was going to have an $80 million surplus. So basically, we're looking at a difference of $110 million over the course of a month, you know, putting us into deficit. And this is so typical of what we've seen for the past decade. I mean, as long as I've been in the legislature, you know, everybody's all, oh, boy, we got this great budget. And then moments later, you see everything fall through. And sure enough, this was a budget built on taxes. Some of the taxes have come in like they were supposed to, but others have not. Notably, the plastic bag tax, $20 million. Sure, I think that's what's coming.
You know, Gail, I was explaining to somebody the other day who's not really well versed in this stuff, and they asked me. They said, what's all this I hear about the plastic bag tax? I said, well, here's all you need to know. They're going to get about $7 million a year, they think, and they budgeted for, what was it, $54 million altogether, Gail, about $27 million a year. So that's all you need to know is now that money, Gail, right, we've got to make up that money somehow, correct?
Oh, yeah, and it's not just that. I mean, there's a lot of other things. What people need to know, I think, Paul, is that, you know, the budget, we voted on a budget in the month of June before the session ended. And the governor and the majority, the Democrats, they were all so proud of themselves for getting done with the budget on time. Isn't it wonderful? And it balances. And it, well, the only problem was that they didn't address half the issue. I mean, I was up in Hartford today talking about the hospital tax settlement, which, you know, is we're talking about hundreds of millions of dollars that we weren't sure how that was going to go in the budget. There has been no bonding voted on all year by the legislature. The transportation issue remains unresolved. There was a business about the restaurant taxes and tip credits, and all of that is just hanging in the balance. So they didn't really finish the budget. They finished the part of the budget that they finished. It wasn't the rest of it. So people should be very skeptical when they hear, oh, yes, indeed, it was done on time. Aren't we wonderful?
Gail,
it wasn't.
So let's get back to something everybody wants to talk about, obviously, is the transportation package. Now, I really wasn't all that surprised a couple of weeks ago when members of the House and Senate, the Democratic majorities, they obviously went to Governor Lamont and said, if you think we're going to commit political suicide on this, you're out of your mind. So we're now back to this whole trucks only thing. Do you really think this is going to fly, or what's going to happen here, Gail, especially going into an election year?
Yeah, it's weird. I think some of this is reflective of, I'll just say it, the governor's unfamiliarity with political circumstances. I just don't think he's lived that enough to realize what this kind of thing means for people. It is very incomprehensible to me that he could suggest tolls only for trucks and to have everybody scoff at it and say, listen, you know, this is not going to be legal. It's not going to pass muster. Rhode Island's having trouble with it. We can't do it. And now all of a sudden it's fine? I don't think so. And more to the point, it wouldn't be, you know, they keep saying they need all this money. Well, if that were really the truth, which it isn't, but if it were, why even bother? Because the truck tolls would not even raise half of what they're talking about needing. So I don't know. I certainly can't speak for what those people are going to do.
And Gail, and also, does this not, I've been told this by several people, I'm sure you've heard the same thing, does this not put in jeopardy some federal transportation money that we already get?
It most certainly could. I don't know why it wouldn't, because every other decision on tolls that does not involve congestion pricing does put that in jeopardy. You know, if you just have congestion pricing, there's a special slot that we fit into, and we do have one of those slots, and if people wanted to do it, they could. But this is not congestion pricing he's talking about.
No.
This is like trucks. We're going to toll trucks. And it's crazy. I mean, it doesn't. If you really are sincere about needing money, this is not a good way to get it. You can't get that much money from trucks. And second, it certainly is the camel's nose under the tent. I think everybody agrees on that.
I love how Gail, how the camel's nose has now become a real buzz phrase at the Capitol. I'm loving that, right?
Oh yeah. Well, I mean, we've been having camel's noses on for years. Today when we were talking about the hospital tax, somebody said, "Well, you know," and then when the agreement's over with, everything sunsets, and I said, "The sun never sets here at this Capitol. Do you understand? Nothing ever sunsets."
The sun doesn't set, and the camel's nose never goes away. Gail, hang on. We'll be right back with you. It is a state rep, Republican state rep, Gail Laviele, joining us for a few minutes. Represents parts of, actually most of Wilton, part of Westport, eastern part of Norwalk as well. We'll ask her about issues in her home district as we come back after traffic and weather together at, 5:16 as we take you home on what's a much better looking afternoon. Noon today than it was yesterday. Traffic and weather together, and then more with Fairfield County State Rep Gail Laviele, straight ahead on WICC. And we continue at, 5:18 on your Tuesday drive home, Connecticut today. Yes, that's me, Paul Pacelli, like Mr. Big Voice said. And joining us right now for a few more minutes, Fairfield County State Rep Republican Gail Laviele. Gail, what are you hearing in the off time that you talk with constituents from your district, Norwalk, Westport, and Wilton, parts of your district? What are you hearing from them when you talk to them about the things that are concerning them?
Well, most of them have been very fixated on local issues. And, of course, the big one in Wilton, the town where I'm from, has, for the past, you know, was so mesmerized by school regionalization, that
yep.
whole proposal that we killed, that got everybody back focused on state and local matters. Because as you remember, Paul, the 2018 election was, you know, just so infused with national sentiment.
Yep. Yep.
And I think this really brought people back to their senses in a way. And you could see that in the municipal election results. Norwalk is very focused on matters that have to do with zoning and the very pronounced growth in the number of students in their schools and how to handle it. And of course, local taxes.
Yeah.
And then Westport's had a lot of, 830G affordable housing issues, mm-hmm. in addition to some problems with their schools. Like, for example, I'm not educational problems, but there was a middle school that had a lot of mold problems.
Oh yeah, in fact, I had a guest on from the State Teachers Union, Gail, a few weeks back, and they are very concerned. In fact, you know, I wondered out loud, you know, how can schools in, let's face it, the richest part of Connecticut, how can we expect our teachers and even our students to go into an environment where, you know, there's toxic mold in some of these schools? Anything that the General Assembly can do, Gail, or is doing on that?
Well, there's been a lot done over the past few years. There have been a lot of modifications made to the school construction reimbursement laws, and there were also, you know, a lot of school security measures and all that. It's related because it's all money. But there are some pretty effective statutes regarding mold. But if if you need to renovate as new, there are provisions for that. If you need to tear down and build, there are provisions for that. And the state assumes partial reimbursement.
Yeah.
But, you know, the state resources are so thin. They're so thin.
Oh, I know.
Everything is illusory. I mean, you know, there's always, well, if we had some money for this and if we had some money for that. But it's all going to the ever-increasing burden of state employee costs.
Yeah.
Union costs. The state government, the legislature, and the the past couple of administrations have literally been slaves to the public sector unions. And last year, and I had to debate every single one of these union arbitration awards on the floor of the House. Last year, that session, state employees were awarded $90 million worth of increased benefits, increased salaries, increased, perks.
Yeah.
That all the taxpayers who don't get those benefits are paying for. And there seems to be no control over this. It is just a limit. It is limitless. How much the unions are able to take away from the general public.
And again, Gail, I say this on the show here all the time and over the years. Everyone wants to pay a union worker what the job is worth. Everyone
sure.
wants to see somebody make a good living with decent benefits. But again, as you just said, there's literally no governance on this. There's no, correct me if I'm wrong here, but there's really no cap to say we can't do that this year when it goes into these arbitration numbers.
That's right. There's not. Once it goes to binding arbitration, you are stuck with whatever the arbitrator comes up with. And the problem is, you know, if you're, let's say, you work for McDonald's and you're in a union.
Yeah.
And you negotiate something, well, it's the shareholders who are going to pay for it. And the shareholders, of course, can always walk away and sell their stock and not do it anymore. But with the public sector unions, the taxpayers are paying for it. And I just wish that everybody in Connecticut would understand this, that the benefits and the salaries and the conditions, the raises, the amounts, the percentages of the raises that state employees get under guarantee, haven't been seen in the private sector maybe in 40 or 50 years.
Oh, it far outstrips that, Gail. It far outstrips it.
But it's the folks who can't get any of that stuff who have to pay for these things for the state employees. And that's where they can't walk away like a shareholder. They're stuck. They're
yeah.
here. They have to pay taxes. And the more those things go up, the more their taxes go up, and the more their services go down.
Gail, and about and the more in about the minute we have left, once we turn the corner and you folks go into the short session in an election year, do you think we will see anything with any of the other ancillary issues with sports gambling, with another casino, with legal marijuana, with the 80-20, the restaurant tax thing that, or the restaurant payment thing that you talked about? Any of those you think might be resolved or not?
Well, you know, it is an election year, and I think it's one of those really unpredictable election years that even the folks in the safe majority are a little worried. So I would be very surprised, but I could be wrong, if there's a vote on tolls at all. I think the restaurant tax is not something that's controversial for the general public.
Yeah.
And it really does need to be resolved, and I wouldn't be surprised if we do resolve that. I can't see a vote on marijuana.
Okay.
I can't, just because, you know, so there may be something on the cost of prescription drugs. And of all those big sort of ancillary issues,
yeah.
Probably the sports betting is the least controversial. So I don't know, that could or could not go forward. I don't know.
Okay.
But I'm not hearing about a lot of push, you know, except coming from the governor to get a lot of these things done.
Interesting.
I don't know. You know, I could be, December's a down month, even though we've got the Port Authority hearing tomorrow.
Have fun with that. That's
the center of corruption.
Yeah.
I mean, big time corruption.
Here comes the camel, Gail. Here comes the camel's nose on that one. Yeah, there you go.
Oh, I think it's the whole camel fault.
State Rep Gail Laviel, parts of Norwalk, Westport, and Wilton, 143rd House District. Gail, thank you. Happy holidays, and we'll speak to you down the line. Thanks.
Thanks for having me. Merry Christmas.
Appreciate it. Bye-bye. Too, Gail. Thanks. All right. Boy, yeah. You see that, folks? That's the big phrase now up at the Capitol. The camel's nose. Don't let the nose peek under the circus tent, because the whole body is going to get in there.